The next item on the agenda is item number 13, to establish regulation for VAC 20-1130, general permit for temporary protective enclosures for shellfish. Item 13. I don't know about that number.
Is this going to be another quick one, Jack?
Yeah, this is the easy issue you were talking about, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a 60-day public comment on this issue, and it ended up, most of the comments came in the day before Thanksgiving after your evaluation packages were mailed out, and then some came in on Monday. So the package before you is the new material. And I'd like to, I think the easiest way to get through this is to simply go through the public comment and have staff advise you how we think the proposed regulation addresses the concerns that are outlined in the public comment. But let me start by saying the regulation before you is the response to a mandate by the General Assembly that you prepare a general permit to cover temporary enclosures that are used for growing shellfish on leased ground. Before I get into the very specific comments, one general overall comment that we received was that individuals could find nowhere in the proposed regulation provisions for an opportunity for public comment on proposals that will come to the commissioner. And the reason for that is that the General Assembly, when they adopted the requirement that we do this, adopted a second section of code that specifies the public comment process. No, we can't step on the toes of the General Assembly, so you don't see anything in the regulation itself about opportunities for public comment, but you do find those in 28.2-603.2 of the Code of Virginia. And it lays out a very specific process. And for the public's benefit, let me just go through it real quickly. When a notification to use temporary structures is received by the commissioner, under the law, he has 30 days to make a decision as to whether or not he's going to advertise that proposal in a local newspaper. If he decides not to advertise, he then immediately notifies the applicant, and they are given approval to do what they've said they want to do. If he does decide to publish it in the newspaper, then it's advertised in the local area and with a 30-day comment period. The commissioner then receives those written comments over that 30-day period, and then based on those written comments, he must make a second decision, that being whether to hold a public hearing on the proposal. If he decides to hold a public hearing, it has to be held sometime within 30 days, and then following the public hearing, the commissioner must make a final decision within 15 days of the hearing. So there is a rather detailed public process that was contemplated by the General Assembly and provided for in the law, and that's why you don't see anything like that in the regulation. There were a couple of public comments already in your evaluation. The first was from DEQ. The commissioner did send a copy of the proposed regulation to that agency, and they've indicated they had no concerns with the proposed action. The Chesapeake Bay Foundation has sent a letter November 13th in support of the proposed regulations. We have an email from Tom Powers as a representative of the Coastal Conservation Association, and he raises two concerns. The first is a desire that the regulation be amended to require that all proposals under this general permit be placed on the agency website for the public to view and comment on for 30 days. The second is that a provision be added to the regulation that says when determining the conditions that the commissioner is going to place on the permittee, he should consider those factors set forth in section 28.2-1205. And those conditions that you find in 1205 are very familiar with you, to you. They are the same factors that you consider when you're approving a habitat permit. And those, so the commissioner would be looking at those and making his decision. With respect to Mr. Powers' first point about the website, the commissioner met with representatives of the CCA and the Virginia Seafood Council on this issue, and after a lengthy discussion, I think there was general agreement from all sides that we not amend the regulation to require all notifications be placed on the web, but that administratively the commissioner agreed to do that, so that when we do receive notices, they will be placed on the agency website with a 15-day public comment period. And he would use that as part of the record or of information that he obtains to then decide whether the proposal should be formally published in a newspaper. So that was an administrative decision rather than a regulatory change that we would offer. Down the road, after we get some experience with this process and determine that, well, maybe we should change the regulation to require this placement on the website, then we'll come back to you. But we'll wait and see how it works out over the coming months. One of the other public comments was from a Mr. Carl Honesty from Annandale, and he makes a comment that there ought to be a positive method of marking each trap location with the name of the owner. We don't require that in the regulation, but what we do have is requirements that the lease be marked with a system of poles that are already required by separate regulation, that within that lease the area that's permitted for cages also be marked with a series of poles, and that signs of a specified nature be placed on those poles to warn the public that there are submerged cages in that area. There's also a requirement in the general permit that no more than one buoy be placed on any one cage. This is an issue about numbers of buoys. There's one group that doesn't want any buoys on the cages because they don't want to look at them from their waterfront property, and there's another group that wants everything heavily marked with buoys so that they know where they are when they're boating or sailing or fishing near them. He suggests that there be a limitation on the total area that can be used in a single location, for instance, no more than 10 acres in Mobject Bay. That is not contemplated in the regulation. What is required is that you can only put cages on your leased ground, so you're limited by what you're leasing. In some cases, that can be a substantial amount of acreage, however. No traps in navigation channels. The regulation does contemplate that, not allowing cages to interfere with navigation. No traps in areas with underwater vegetation. There's language in there to cover that. Structures to be used for aquaculture or bivalves only. And, in fact, that's also a provision of the law. So we're only talking about clams and oysters here. Let me move into some of the new regulations. I think you'll find that most of the comments are repetitive, and so we can get through this fairly quickly. Mr. Keel from Hayes said there should be an opportunity to protest. He wasn't aware that there is this code section that sets up a public notice provision. In a couple of cases, we see public comments asking that property owners within 1,200 feet of the proposed cages be notified. the current regulation requires that riparian owners within 500 feet be notified, and that's generally consistent with the distance that the Habitat Division uses, and that's where the 500 feet came from. There's some precedent for that. Another point, cages should not be allowed closer than 500 feet from the shoreline or a pier. The current regulation limits that to 100 feet without the permission of the property owner. Keep in mind, however, the commissioner under the law is authorized to place his own conditions on any operation. So if there are conditions that warrant for some reason that you should be 500 feet away from a pier because the guy's got a 90-foot sailboat and has to turn to get into the pier or something, the commissioner can place that condition on that particular proposal. So it's not as if we're adopting hard and fast provisions here. The commissioner has a lot of latitude to add additional requirements on any permittee. Another comment, everyone in the county should be made aware of any large proposal. Again, there's this public comment notice that's provided for. That the county should have a say in what's happening along the shoreline. The General Assembly hasn't contemplated that. I don't think we have the authority to grant that unless the General Assembly says so. A lot of similar comments from Mr. Riley, who's a member of the Board of Supervisors from Gloucester County. So I'm not going to go through those. They're similar to the previous comments. Although he does indicate that personally he hopes it does not come to the zoning of water, you know, where we zone certain areas for cages and other areas for not. He admits that land zoning issues are complicated enough as it is, and I would agree with that statement. Mr. Hendricks from Hayes is one, again, who supports a larger distance for notification of property owners and the distance from shoreline. He'd like to see that at 1,000 feet. And 300 feet from the shoreline or a pier. He's also concerned that people might lump large numbers of cages into a small amount of acreage because there's a provision that on average within your permitted area you cannot have more than 250 cages. And so the example he gives is if you have a 100-acre lease and you want to put 25,000 cages down, you could put 25,000 of them on 1 acre and nothing on the others. But quite frankly, the 250 number comes from industry advice that, you know, you have to make room for working these cages. You can't cram them into so tightly that you restrict water flow to the animals that are feeding and trying to grow. And you have to have room to get your equipment in there to work on the thing. So I, you know, certainly we would look at that kind of thing before the commissioner would offer his approval, but I don't see it being a problem at this point. The next commenter raises all of the same similar issues. One of the points was that he's fearful that enough cages would be placed in front of his property to sort of form a third side paralleling the shoreline to block his access altogether. And again, the regulation prohibits that. You have to allow for navigation. And so I don't see a proposal of that nature being approved by the commissioner. The final commenter again, a lot of the same comments about a desire to have public hearings. One of the comments was that we do a waterway suitability study for any project proposed to place protective cages in an area exceeding 5 acres. I'm not really familiar with that term of art, but certainly every proposal will undergo a staff review in terms of its impact on the environment or navigation or safety. Although we wouldn't term it a waterway suitability study. He also speaks of the need for guidelines that are in addition to the regulation, that are of an advisory nature, much the way Habitat has a series of guidelines for people doing things on state-owned bottomlands. And that certainly is our intent, to put together a series of guidelines that would be educational in nature. They're not going to happen overnight, and they will involve, I think, some meetings with the various stakeholders on this issue to prepare those. He also offers a number of comments about the aquaculturist showing proof of liability insurance in the amount of $1 million in case of an accident or injury, or the posting of a bond to remove structures that somehow get lost or disturbed by storm events. And we don't contemplate either of those things in the regulation. Quite frankly, if you're approved, if you're given this general permit for the activity you undertake under that permit is a lawful activity. So I'm not sure where liability lies. It's really a lot different than a crab pot. Somebody hitting a crab pot. It's placed there lawfully. He's worried about stacked cages toppling in areas of high energy, something that would have to be taken into account. I think the only final comment he makes is that you should delay a decision on these regulations until the Middle Peninsula Planning District Commission User Conflict Committee completes its work. There is such a group that's in existence, and they're looking at a variety of conflicts on the water, including aquaculture activities. Unfortunately, that group will not have a final report until November of 2008, and we are mandated by the General Assembly to complete this regulation by March of next year.
And for the record, the Middle Peninsula Planning District Commission was represented very capably from the very outset of the discussions, as I recall.
Yes, Dr. Mo Lynch, who's a member of the Planning District Commission, was a member of the ad hoc panel.
Did a great job.
Who helped us with this.
Thank you.
Be glad to answer any questions.
Questions to Jack. Mr. Tankard.
Just so I've got it straight, so if I've got leased ground and I will not have to advertise for putting structures on that leased ground in the paper as I did when I leased the ground. Is that correct, Jack?
Not unless the commissioner decides that it needs to be advertised.
Okay. So it's not mandatory.
There is potential that a proposal could be of a nature where the commissioner didn't think it was necessary to inform the public. It will be placed, though, on the website. So everything will appear on the website for 15 days, and anyone can comment when it's there.
Jack, I think you may want to mention the only exception is those that are currently established under different permit that want to convert to this general permit.
That was part of the administrative agreement. Though there are a few aquaculture operations that now operate under a habitat permit. And the agreement was that if those individuals come in and now want to change from a habitat permit to this general permit without any changes, that those would not appear on the website. They've been through a public hearing process already.
They're familiar with. Further questions? Thank you very much, Jack. Open a public hearing. Yes, sir. Gentleman in a plaid shirt, then Mr. Powers.
I'm trying not to take up very much of your time, as much I could say. I've been in this business for a long time. I started back in the 90s and came up with the idea of floating oysters on the surface. And I've been doing that since that time.
And your name for the record is?
My name for the record is Paul Applin, APPLIN, Gunpoint Oyster Company. I'm the president.
Pleasure to have you here.
And I'm going to only bring up one topic.
Please.
And this is in the paper you have under the special conditions, item L. Nothing in the general permit shall authorize the placement of any temporary protective enclosure designed to float on the surface of the water. I put all my effort in this. I've been doing it. And I don't know where this came from or what the objection is, except I have had objections from some people. In fact, I've been before this commission on this, that they did not like looking at the floats. And that's the only objection that I've had. I do not. I have plenty of planting ground. I have over 100 acres of planting ground, which I got way back when. I put 11,000 bushels of shell on it that I bought through BMRC and watched the oysters die, and so I went to what I'm doing now. None of these leases that I have really suit the floating of oysters over a long-term period.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go back and forth between the creek and the open water. I have what are known as depuration or just cleaning areas, which I have marked with flags, and I'm out there, and I'm not in front of any houses. They can't be seen from the houses, and that works pretty well. But I still have to start my oysters in the creek, and unfortunately, they can be seen from houses. I've had some objections in that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, but I still want to float oysters. And I want to know if this regulation is going to tell me I can't float oysters, I'll close my tent.
Jack, under this general permit, isn't it under 603.13?
Yes. The nothing in this general permit prohibits anything.
Right.
What it says is
it's allowability.
Yeah. So if you want to float, if you want a permit for floating structures, you go through the habitat permit process,
right,
which you've already done and apparently have a permit for.
Done. So you're, it didn't preclude it.
You're done.
Okay.
Next.
The code section that actually directs we do this says this is for cages on leased ground. So it doesn't allow us to develop a general permit for floating structures.
Right.
You're free to go to the Habitat Division. I left out one important public comment that I need to bring to your attention. It was the last one in the package, and that is from VIMS. They have suggested one additional sentence.
In the SAV section?
Yeah.
I thought maybe you'd covered that when you said what you did, but anyway, go ahead.
Mr. Varnell and Dr. Orth and others at VIMS reviewed the regulation for us, and their concern was in cases where you have a documented historical occurrence of SAV, but no SAV there now, and what cages might do to it if it comes back. And so they are recommending the addition of a single sentence to Section 50, paragraph C, that says, due to the documented historical occurrence of SAV beds in some currently unvegetated areas and the established goal of restoration of SAV to these areas, no temporary protective enclosure shall be placed in or upon these areas without review in consultation with VIM staff to first determine the potential for SAV impact during the term of the lease. And we would recommend that as an amendment to the regulation.
Is there any way of determining how long a period of time from how long there was SAV, or we just...
VIMS has good data on when SAV was in the area,
right,
from their historical records.
And Bob gives a very good report.
And he's going to have knowledge of, you know, within the term of the lease is 10 years.
So within that 10-year
period?
What's
the likelihood of that SAV coming back in that area, and what offer? It doesn't stop anything. It just says we're going to comment on that to the commissioner, and he can use that information in contemplating.
All right, that's fine. That's all I need. Thank you, Jack. Ms. Powers?
Thank you.
My name is Tom Powers. Right now I'm speaking for CCA on this. Let me first start off by clearly stating that we understand the Commission is obligated to follow the direction of the legislature and implement these regulations. Furthermore, we understand that with the current status of the stocks, disease in the wild stocks, and water quality issues that lead to hypoxic areas which are fatal to oysters, one of the few ways to potentially continue an oyster industry in Virginia is through aquaculture. Understanding this, we agree with the general need to establish a clear process for issuing these permits. That being said, we were disappointed when representatives from our organization were not included in the ad hoc committee that was formed to develop these regulations. We were further disappointed to learn that, as stated by Mr. DuPaul in your September meeting, no one from the boating or recreational fishing community was included on the ad hoc committee that was formed to negotiate and develop these regulations. Why are we concerned? Let's look at what the regulations will allow. 70 cubic foot structures, that means approximately 6 foot by 6 foot by 2 foot, or 5 by 5 by 3 foot tall structures. They'll present a substantial hazard to motorized vessels, water skiers, etc., unless they are placed in waters with a clearance of at least 6 feet. Imagine going off water skis at 40 miles an hour. It will allow up to 250 structures per acre. If they're distributed uniformly, that means one structure every 13.2 feet on a grid. There's no limit to the number of acres that can be allocated to a given individually, family, or company. Deployment of gear will pretty much eliminate the use of the area by commercial and recreational gillnet fishermen, as well as substantially restricts the use of crab pots, trot lines, as well as recreational drift fishing. The only required notice is to the adjacent riparian property owners within 500 feet of the proposed deployment. That was with the original regulation. We're concerned that the regulation that went to public hearing did not include references to the public trust doctrine when considering the applications. We were concerned that the process did not guarantee public notice in a manner that was clearly accessible, easily accessible to all state residents. Our disappointment is that the boating public and other commercial users of the resource were not involved in the development of the code section of regulations. Our real fear is not the smaller operations that you have been have seen and reviewed with similar applications in the past year. By this, I mean with a limited number of structures and several 3 to 5 acre permitted areas where the intent is to move the structures from area to area depending on the water conditions. Our real concern is what will happen when area Kansas oysters are approved for wide-scale aquaculture applications and the return on investment has the potential to substantially increase. Our fear is that some of the permitted areas become so large that they dominate the given local waterways, leaving little room for public use because of all the deployed structures or the distribution of those deployments. Our real concern is that the commissioner would be given every opportunity to hear from the public when it's considering these applications. At this point in time, we have two items that we requested. Both of those are addressed by Jack, the inclusion of state code section 28.2.1205, and the regulation include the wording that requires public notice on the VMRC site webpage, similar to what you've already done with town nets. In a meeting with staff and the commissioner, as Jack presented, they agreed that they would include the code section and that they would, as an interim measure, post it on the webpage with the intent of putting something similar in regulation after staff, the public, and industry get some experience as part of this process. Our hope is that the guidelines developed by staff for actually issuing these permits are developed with the involvement not only of the aquaculture industry, but also with the involvement of representatives of boating public as well as other industry representatives such as gillnet, crabbers, and poundnet fishermen. Thank you again for letting me speak on this issue.
Tom, just one comment. During the ad hoc committee meetings, were you or was CCA aware that they were ongoing?
We were aware that they were going to happen. We were not aware until after the fact that they actually happened. I know I did talk to Jack, and I had personally seen some of the regulations in advance and commented on them, but we weren't. The real key to me there is that the nuts and bolts of the regulation were negotiated out. And not being in the room, both with the code section and the regulation, to participate in those negotiations, minor changes.
Well, I will say that I'm probably to blame for that, because as you recall, I had been probably on as commissioner just a couple of months then. No excuse, but I will tell you this. Since then, many times CCA wanted to involve dialogue or whatever, my door's always been open. It always will be open, so whatever I can do for CCA or any other member of any sector that wants to be involved in the process, don't hesitate to call.
Yeah, and I will have to thank you. I spent probably 2 or 3 hours of your time 1 week dealing with this.
My time is your time.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Who's next? Mr. Erskine? AJ?
Commissioner Bowman, members of the commission, AJ Erskine with Bevan's Oyster Company, Coward Seafood. I just want to give a little bit of background, I guess, as to why the industry really sees a need for this at this point in time with the development of aquaculture, specifically oyster aquaculture. There are several representatives from the industry here today, people that have actually been doing aquaculture for years. And those are aquaculturists that have participated in intensive aquaculture cages, you know, bags, racks, those kind of things, as well as Lake Cowart, who has been in the traditional oyster business, is all you know. And you're starting to see those processors begin to become involved with intensive aquaculture. And the real reason for something like that is protection of this from cow-nose rays. And we need a simplified, streamlined process, and that's the reason that the industry really went to the General Assembly to request that we have something that's manageable for all users of the resource. So that's really why we wanted to get towards this means to an end. I don't need to go into why it's ecologically important to have oysters in Chesapeake Bay. I think we all understand that. But we did, I think it's important to understand that through this whole process, the industry conceded quite a bit. And I think some others are going to speak to it. But we met with the interest groups, with CCA, as you know, with waterfront landowners, agreed to bring this process from the General Assembly back to VMRC, and I'd like to recognize Jack for his efforts in developing this general permit. It hasn't always been easy. There's been a lot of concessions and compromises, but the industry has conceded in this process. More recently, you've heard about posting on the VMRC website. We do have concerns about posting on the website all new applications for obvious reasons. It opens up to the whole world, not just the residents of the Commonwealth that might have legitimate concerns as to proposals. You know, we're looking to stabilize an industry here. When I spoke about aquaculturists possibly on the Eastern Shore that have been growing oysters for years, you know, it's predominantly for a half-shell market. And then you've seen more recently some of these larger processors, Lakey in particular, that are getting into this, and that's for the shuck market. So There is a potential for aquaculture to stabilize this industry. We know about the limited success with oyster restoration. So we do need something that is tangible, that we can put our hands around, be able to do this in a process that is reasonable for all the resource users, but that we can also rely on. I want to just very quickly go through some of these bullet points within the general permit that is limiting the industry, and not only limiting us, but things that we've compromised on, conceded, that allow the public to have input or restrict us from being unresponsible with what we do. We notify riparian owners within 500 feet of a proposed project. Like I mentioned, general public notification through the VMRC website. Limiting the size of the structure. You can't just put anything out there. Proper marking of the aquaculture area. For public safety and navigation, a minimum of 100-foot distance from the shoreline in any private and commercial piers, limiting the number of structures per acre, no floating culture, which has already been addressed, and strict removal of the structures as they're not actively in use for propagating shellfish within 5 business days. Those kind of measures, you know, require this industry to develop it and act responsibly. I also want to point out that what we're asking about is nothing really. What we're asking for today with this general permit is really nothing new. It's a procedural change. We still have aquaculture that has been occurring. We're looking to make a procedural change with this general permit, something that is simplified. It develops a new fee structure, as you see, something a little bit more reasonable for us. And I think it's also important to recognize that the riparian owners, owned to the mean low watermark. And not to say we own that area, but we do lease the ground, and we have the right to grow oysters on that leased ground, propagating shellfish. Lastly, I'll mention that we have limited areas to do this in. What we use in particular to us is hard shell ground. We probably, in our estimation, have about 1% of the available ground in the state of Virginia that we can actively utilize for cage culture that we use. We've already heard about some of the suggestions that came to Jack about moving 1,000 feet offshore or several hundred feet around from a commercial pier, or having a minimum vertical clearance above these structures for navigation purposes and everything. But where does that put the industry? I mean, where are we supposed to do this activity that is frankly endorsed by federal agencies, be it NOAA, be state agencies, VIMS? You all, as VMRC, have promoted aquaculture in the past. We certainly accept and promote aquaculture. So if there's all this encouragement, where are we supposed to do it? If it can't be in channels and marked navigation, we're trying to do this in an area that is out of the way. So I would question where we would be able to do it if we're supposed to push further away from shore or have a minimum, a required hard and fast minimum vertical clearance above these structures. We're trying to avoid navigation, not move closer towards navigation conflicts. So I'd like to possibly, if it's appropriate, reserve some time to comment to any opposition that might be heard.
We don't normally do that, but we'll consider that. Mr. Hayes, thank you, AJ. Good to have you here, sir.
Commissioner Bowman, Associate Commissioners, having sat on that side of the bar, I know what my opinion was of people who showed up at 5:30, so I'll be very brief.
You didn't show up at 5:30, though.
We had two words when we were working. I worked with the Virginia Seafood Council and a number of the stakeholder groups on putting together the legislation that was sponsored by Delegate Whitman and then in developing the regulations. And the two guiding words for this whole thing are common sense. Where a leaseholder can use this method on his grounds to grow shellfish, make his grounds productive again, and there's no user conflicts because he's in a remote area, he can do it with a minimal amount of paperwork and hassle. If he's in an area where there would be user conflicts, the commissioner has full authority to sort them out. So, as I said, common sense. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. Who's next? Matters before. That's three when I closed it. Why does that happen? Go ahead, sir.
My name's Jack White, New Point Oyster Company. I don't presently use these cages, but I want to support my industry. I did want a point of clarification. There's nothing in the reg. We've clarified that would prohibit floats that goes to habitat, but also any other traditional. I use a bottom cage that is less than a 1 foot profile.
Covered by a different regulation.
Okay. I also want to commend Mr. Travelstead. He was very generous with his time to give me an opportunity to comment and actually paid attention to my comments. And I think we have a better reg for it. This is a water-dependent activity of a temporary impact. The thing I like about what Mr. Travelstead has drafted is the flexibility that he's built into it and the power to the commissioner to be able to adjust and address particular specific issues as to the distance of shoreline, that kind of thing. There's a tremendous capital investment in this, and we do need a predictable and at least safe opportunity to go forward. Also, the Commonwealth signed an agreement, the Chesapeake Bay Goals 2000. I do not think that we can meet it in the form of oysters or the growth in oysters without commercial aquaculture. Also, for the other users of the water, I'm a property owner. I hate water jet skis. boats. They erode my shoreline. My shoreline, I have over a half a mile of shoreline, and I can't afford to riprap it. I don't want to riprap it. I want it in a natural state. So I'm given. I want to take some now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Who is next? Going one, Eric. Going once, twice, sold. Mr. Gallivan.
My name's Tom Gallivan again from the Eastern Shore. I grow oysters in cages in Nassauwatuck's Creek, and I've actually used the 12-inch regulation or rule or whatever it is to set up my farm, but certainly have some other. It would be nice if this would pass. I'm very supportive of this. Obviously, aquaculture is the future, as people have pointed out. I would say in Nassauwatuck's Creek, quite honestly, that we have the only oyster reefs and the subsequent recreational fishing and habitat that they provide that are in existence, myself and one other person that cultures oysters in cages. And unfortunately, that's the only way that we can grow them. They won't grow on the bottom quickly. They're susceptible to disease. And as far as the concerns that have been addressed about commercial, industrial-scale culture, at this time, it's incredibly labor-intensive to do it this way. It's incredibly expensive. And Ariakensis, and I still think that is something that is, I don't think that's anything that's happening tomorrow. So I think that very large-scale commercial aquaculture is unlikely at this time. And in the future, you might have to come back and revisit this issue again if there were going to be 100-acre farms applied for and put out there. The other thing I'd just like to bring up is that I know there was some concern about the 12-inch rule and this regulation having any effect on that, and I'd just like to make sure that this is a totally separate deal, because we grow quite a few clams under the 12-inch rule as well, and it's a very important industry. And something else that was of concern was that I think particularly on the Eastern Shore, and I would assume on the Northern Neck and other areas, that the Internet is not an appropriate place to advertise these farms, because the people that use the local watershed aren't going to be checking the website. They're going to be reading the Eastern Shore News or whatever Northern Neck newspaper there is, and they won't be looking on your website. It might be their fault for not doing that, but some of them don't even have computers that are using that particular watershed.
That argument was made.
So, right. And then finally, you brought up some of the recommendations about SAV. And I was at a representing Cherrystone at the time at a Seaside Heritage Program. And Dr. Orth made the comment that anything under 6 feet would be considered SAV, historic SAV habitat. And that would really, as AJ pointed out, really tie our hands as to appropriate areas to grow oysters in. So where you would draw that line would be a major concern to our industry, bringing in historic SAV habitat. And it would also encompass most of the seaside if you looked at truly historic SAV habitat.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. My name is Bill Kirby. I'm Gloucester County. I just wanted to echo some of the comments that were made, particularly about the newspaper notice. I didn't know about this meeting until I read it in the newspaper last week, so I don't routinely, and I don't think the general public routinely scans the website. I would support almost a mandatory publication of these things in newspapers versus the commissioner being deciding whether he should put it in the newspaper. I didn't see anything about night marking of these things. We're concerned about navigational problems, but I guess there's no night marking.
The signage that we have developed has it's a 15-inch square with a reflective border around the edges, so
backside.
It'll show up.
Backside?
It'll be it'll be on one side facing out and around the perimeter of the permitted area.
Okay.
So if you find yourself in the middle of the perimeter area,
you're in trouble anyway.
Okay.
The other thing would be I'm really concerned about the minimum depth type thing. I heard another individual talk about, you know, hazard to navigation, and I know there was this middle peninsula thing. There was significant concern down the Sarah Creek area where they're running into the things underwater. So although they're not in the lanes of navigation, they are navigational hazards at some time. So I support changing the minimum distance. It says from shorelines and piers for several reasons. Maneuvering large boats around piers can be difficult in certain winds, particularly for single screw and large displacement within a 100-foot buffer, if the cages are up high into their draft. So that's a significant concern to me as a boat operator. Also, as a person fishing from the pier, I can cast 100 feet. So, you know, that's kind of impinges people's rights to fish from their pier if they have cages out there. I personally have a duck blind at the end of my riparian right, but it's not addressed. It just says shorelines and piers. I don't know how that could be incorporated, you know, because that's a legitimate right to use the waterway.
I can forbid it.
You can on an individual case basis, if I know somebody's going to do it out there and read the paper.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Understand. I know there's the option in there. It says you can do whatever you want to do with these things. And I see it talks about removing the enclosures, but it doesn't include the buoys and the placards, unless that's understood. The wording is specifically enclosures. I think maybe, you know, we've got to consider the placards and the buoys that may be left behind when somebody abandons an area. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir, very much.
I got here at 9:30.
You and me both. A little earlier. Yes, sir. Hey, how are you?
My name is Eric Weller.
Hey, Eric, could you come over here to the mic? Thank
that.
You.
I apologize.
That's okay.
To get back with the man, if you go with the newspaper legal ad, I just got two bills from the Virginia Pilot for two oyster ground applications, and it was almost $1,800. So it's very expensive.
We did consider that during the course of the discussion.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric. Anyone else? Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Fox.
May I ask Jack a question?
Yes, you may. Travelstead.
I've looked through this, but I haven't found anything that defines the height off of the bottom that may be allowed for these structures. Is that different than the crab pot rule?
There's two things in the regulation. There's
cubic feet.
There's the cubic foot requirement on any particular individual structure, and that's designed to avoid the use of massive structures that would require cranes and things to lift. You'd have to go to the Habitat Division to get approval for that kind of thing. The regulation, the general permit, does contemplate the stacking of cages. So technically they could be stacked, you know, from the bottom right up to the surface under the general permit, assuming it's done in an area where it makes common sense. Mr. Hayes,
so one cage could be
one cage could be
crab pot.
Sure, it could be 2 feet high. I mean, again, we're talking about shellfish, so
yeah.
You know, there's doesn't make a lot of sense to have a real tall cage.
Right.
But
heavy.
It does to perhaps use racks where you might have multiple cages or cages stacked one on top of the other.
Or racks with bags?
Yep. Yep. All of those are contemplated in the regulation.
Okay.
Further questions?
So, excuse me, one more question.
Follow up.
So that means that these cages could be stacked right up to water level if it was permitted.
If it was permitted, yes.
Okay.
As some of them grew in the old days, I guess. Further questions? Matters before the Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on the issue of minimum clearance. It seemed that minimum clearance is one of the more contentious issues. I guess it was discussed during the discussion, and you know, on the industry side, if you had a minimum clearance, you would significantly limit the areas where they could do this, because they would be a lot of areas would be lost due to anoxia, et cetera, and a lot of intertidal type areas would be precluded. And yet you've got the public safety issue also raised and offsetting that. But it seems to me that issue is going to get fair treatment in the course of staff analyses, together with your review of the permits as it stands at this point.
It will. And sometimes if you think about in these areas where these are going to be, you're probably better off presuming that the entire column in that specific area is going to be out of bounds versus guessing what would be in bounds and out of bounds as far as the draft is concerned. That's why it's very important to thoroughly evaluate the exact location of these projects. That's what's really important.
Well, I think it's clear there are going to be some areas where they're inappropriate, in very high traffic areas, et cetera, but that's the type of information that's going to come to light through staff analyses and your consideration.
Right. Matters before the commission. Mr. Tankard.
I have to say, I do have some heartburn. Mr. Hayes mentioned the common sense aspect of it. And I know on Chincoteague, they're a high-tech area. They got computers in every household, but places like Oyster and Sanford and Saxis, these folks don't have computers, but they're using the waterways like a lot of us use highways. And if they can't find out what's going on those waterways, I'm a little bit worried about the common sense aspect, but given that we have a commissioner of your esteem, and I am comfortable.
Boy, you can tell it's late in the day. But I thank you.
I will support this measure, and I'll support staff's recommendation. But I do have some heartburn, given the common sense aspect. So I make a motion that we move again forward on this legislation as well.
On this regulation?
Regulation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Schick. Further discussion? Well, let me tell you, this was a work in progress and a good work in progress by all involved. There was give and take. There's a lot of considerations made. Is it perfect? Nothing's perfect. But I can tell you, as far as the amount of work that went into it, by the myriad of concerns, although we did miss some sectors, they were afforded the opportunity to comment later on. We spent a good amount of time with them to try to put together a regulation that, as Mr. Tim Hayes said, an esteemed former member of this commission, something that was commonsensical in approach, and hopefully we have succeeded. And I'm very, very, very complimentary and proud of all those that participated in the process. So with that, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all very much. Last item on the agenda is Recreational Fishing Advisory Board recommendations. Who's handling that one? Sonia.
I promise to make this short. Unless you have a lot of questions.
All in favor of the motion?
That's fine if you're ready. Just real quickly for the record.
Please be quiet as you depart, please. Go ahead.
I'll just speak really loud.
That'll work. I'll yell really loud backwards.
The current status of the fund is $1,436,858.